Welcome to Business and Oil. Articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Section F, Oil Report. Changing Marketplace. Private Equity Adjusting to Changing Energy Marketplace by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Private equity has been investing in businesses for more than a century, but private equity funds targeting the energy industry didn't appear until roughly 30 years ago. Even in that short amount of time, the marketplace has changed significantly, according to David Hobson, a partner in PetroCap LLC. Addressing members of the Society of Independent Professional Earth Scientists last week, Hobson said more than $178 billion is looking for a home in upstream or midstream assets. Those billions will have a hard time finding a home, and Hobson detailed several reasons why. The leading source of private equity funding has been foundations and public pension funds, followed by private pension plans and endowments, such as from the University of Texas and Stanford, Yale, and Harvard universities, he said. But now those same endowments are under tremendous pressure from professors and students to stop investing in oil and gas, making it harder for private equity to raise funds, he said. He went on to note that private equity funds, as a rule, don't see returns on their investments until they sell the assets. But public equity funding to the energy industry has essentially been shut off, making it difficult for the private equity funds to sell those assets. Private equity funds have figured out that they need to hold their assets for a longer period, he said. The funds have lowered their threshold on rates of return and shifted their strategy from build and flip to build a business, he said. And they're reevaluating their portfolios, he said. As the big funds realize they have 17 companies at work in the Delaware Basin that they're paying overhead for, they realize they can't do that any longer, so they take those 17 companies and say, we only need 7 or 8 or 5, and they squish them into that number. The dark side of that is, if you're a company that gets squished, all that work you put into that company, all that you've built, is now owned by someone else. The larger equity funds are now focusing on investments of $100 million or more. Large funds such as NCAP, NGP, and Kayne Anderson are raising billions, Hobson said, and are having to invest those billions in larger increments in order to see returns. Funds are also returning to their roots and focusing on proved, developed, producing assets with cash flow and low risk, and working to lower costs and improve operational efficiencies, he said. A number of funds are establishing portfolios focused on mineral and royalty rights. In 2016, private equity spent money to sponsor royalty companies, he said. There are 36 private equity fund sponsors that have made 62 commitments to mineral and royalty companies. Hobson urged his audience to extend their focus on ESG and said private equity firms as well as Wall Street investors are studying how operators deal with the environment, social issues, and corporate governance. Whether or not they agree with all the environmental movement's positions, he said, the green movement is real. Citing Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg, he said, a lot of what she says appeals to those 16 to 30 who are making up their minds about how they feel about our industry. If a potential investor asked PetroCap about ESG concerns, and was told there was nothing to those concerns, our investments would stop, he said. A number of the super majors, such as ExxonMobil and Shell, and even large independents, such as Pioneer Natural Resources, are addressing concerns. Hobson said much of it is common sense issues, such as emissions and how secure berms are in holding drilling and frack ponds. By the way, this applies to all industries, he said. We need to understand where they're coming from because they will have a bigger say in how our industry is run. TXOGA, Energy Industry Must Address Environment to Maintain Growth, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, proudly detailed the record-shattering contribution the state's oil and gas industry made to state and local coffers, $16.4 billion in state and local taxes and royalties. But amid the good news, he said last week in a media call discussing the association's annual report on the industry's economic impact, there are challenges ahead. We know growth is not guaranteed, he said. The industry responds to marketplace demands. We know global demand will continue, but that growth won't be at as high a rate as we've seen. Therefore, production won't grow as robustly as in the past. Asked about the focus on climate change and an influx of new voters who support eliminating fossil fuels, Staples stressed that the energy industry is committed to addressing climate change and is taking steps to be as no-carbon or low-carbon as possible. We believe all emissions contribute to climate change, and the industry is doing its part to reduce emissions, he said. We need to look at all sources, every source of energy produced. The oil and gas industry has a responsibility to find solutions through innovation and technology to control emissions and responsibly produce energy. We share a common goal of environmental progress and economic strength, Staples said. No matter how much you advocate for renewables, there's no replacement for how much good comes from oil and natural gas. He said Texas is at risk if we don't have a real, factual conversation about climate change. We're committed to making progress. We're committed to being leaders on the environment. Chemical Company Offers Solution to Frack Hits, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. It's an issue Permian Basin oil and gas operators have been grappling with as they drill wells in tighter and tighter quarters. How to keep hydraulic fracturing of the newer or child wells from interfering or damaging the older or parent wells or being damaged themselves. It's a dire problem, Eric Foster, chief executive officer of 10X Technologies, said in a phone interview. He said that over the next couple of years, domestic oil and gas production will begin to decline because drillers can't drill enough wells to offset the lower productivity of damaged parent wells or the child wells. As competitive as the industry is, companies recognize the existential threat this is, especially in the Permian Basin, he said. If we don't come up with a solution, the Permian Basin could lose its place as the top producing region in the world. There's good acreage that can't be tapped because of the frack hit problem. The industry is desperate to find better strategies to protect the parent wells and get more production from the child wells, he said. Rystad, the energy consulting service, estimates that only 20% of the wells drilled in the Permian Basin in the third quarter of last year were parent wells. Foster's Philadelphia-based oilfield chemical company is offering a chemical solution as opposed to a mechanical solution. NoHit is designed to be pumped as an additive to a parent well's preload or active loading program. Our product involves the injection of a chemical solution that includes aluminum, Foster said. Then we inject an activator, which will vary depending on the characteristics of the well. That activator will change the pH of the water in the well and cause the aluminum to react, stripping the hydrogen off the water and generating hydrogen gas. That gas pressurizes the depleted rock and increasing associated rock stress, discouraging child well fractures from communicating with the parent well fractures. That not only protects the parent well, but encourages the fractures in the child wells to target new reservoirs, Foster said. To address the problem, some operators inject gas, which can be expensive, while other companies shut in the well for a period of time to let the reservoir build up pressure, he said. Others preload the well with water. He described the Permian Basin as thirsty ground with big wells that take an ocean of water to fill every nook and cranny. I just need enough water that the aluminum will react. I just need a small lake, not an ocean. Foster said he believes no hit it will improve the capital structure of his customers. He used the example of a producer who based his reservoir value on density of 100 wells, but could only drill 50 because the communication between wells impaired production. You've reduced your reservoir value 50%, he said. This is almost a live-or-die problem. If we and others can help restore reservoir value by restoring density, that helps the bottom line. There is a cost to his product, he acknowledged. But when you spent $7 million on a well, how much is it worth to not wreck it? He said. The technology has worked well in the lab, and Foster said he is anxious to get it in the ground. It will be used for the first time by the end of February, he said. The company has been in talks with producers in several producing basins, including in the Niobrara, Eagle Ford, and in Calgary, Alberta, but he said it is strongly focused on the Permian Basin. He wants companies to talk to us about how they would experiment with our product and urges collaboration to find solutions. Concert will aid oil workers. Randy Rogers Band, Hamilton's on the ticket for March event. OA News at OAOA.com. Oilfield Helping Hands will host the second annual Black Gold Bash benefit concert in Midland in March. OHH and Roseland Oil and Gas are holding the event, and it features the Randy Rogers Band and the Hamiltons on March 25th at the Midland County Horseshoe Amphitheater. A VIP dinner with the Hamiltons performing begins at 6 p.m., and the doors open at 7 p.m., with the Randy Rogers Band on at 8 p.m. General admission tickets are $30 if purchased in advance, or $40 at the door. Oilfield Helping Hands is a nonprofit organization established in Houston in 2003. OHH helps oilfield families in financial crisis. The organization has provided more than $5 million to industry workers and their families. OHH continues to work in the most economical fashion to maximize the funds available to recipients each year, press materials from the group detailed. Bill Marcus, OHH national president, in a news release, said the Randy Rogers Band and the Hamiltons will deliver a fantastic evening of entertainment. We're encouraging everyone to come along and enjoy a great night out while doing their bit to raise funds for oilfield families in desperate need of financial aid. As a bonus, company sponsors of the event will enjoy a range of benefits, including parking lot signage setup, VIP access, and VIP parking. The Randy Rogers Band hails from San Marcos and is popular nationwide, but particularly in Texas. They have been active for 20 years and had a number of hits in the Billboard Top 40. The latest album by the band was Hellbent in 2019. The group's website has Rogers quoted as saying, "It is important, especially in today's day and age, not to put out content just for the sake of content. People see through that, and it's a big mistake young artists make just to put a video or a new song out just to have something to talk about, Rogers said on the website. There is a lost art to making an entire album, being a cohesive unit, and have it be something that you can stand up and play. We have to record songs we can play live. 99% of the income we share is because we're playing a show, so those songs can't be throwaway songs. Rogers is also a big fan of collaboration and has partnered with friend Wade Bowen on the infectious Hold My Beer projects and joined forces with Lone Star legend Robert Earl Keen as the Stryker Brothers. He recently joined Lyle Lovett, Willie Nelson, and Jerry Jeff Walker to sing on Michael Martin Murphy's Austinology album. Event sponsors are being sought to help offset event expenses to allow maximum proceeds to be used to benefit oilfield families in financial crisis. Companies who wish to sponsor will be recognized several ways during the event and on the OHH website, and a variety of commitment levels are available. To purchase a table or for information about a sponsorship, contact Katie Grimes at katie.grimes@oilfieldhelpinghands.org or 512-635-2331. If you go, what? Oilfield Helping Hands concert with Randy Rogers Band and the Hamiltons. When? 6 p.m. March 25th. Where? Midland County Horseshoe Amphitheater. Tickets $30 in advance and $40 at the door. Visit oilfieldhelpinghands.org. Oilfield Helping Hands, oilfieldhelpinghands.org. The Hamiltons, philhamiltonmusic.com. Randy Rogers Band, randyrogersband.com.
Lacey cites oil business experience. Congressional candidate says industry must be protected in Washington, by Bob Campbell. Confronting a crowded Republican congressional primary field and a probable May 26 runoff, former Midland City Councilman J. Ross Lacey is counting on a money-laden campaign chest and his credibility as an oil company president to carry him to victory. Referring to former Air Force fighter pilot August Pfluger II and ex-congressional aide Brandon Batch, who moved home to San Angelo and Midland, respectively, to run, Lacey said, "I didn't just move back to run for Congress. I'm from West Texas, and I understand the oil and gas industry better than any other candidate in this race, which is extremely critical in the Permian Basin. Without oil, we don't have an economy. I will go fight the liberal left and the Green New Deal, who want to shut down fracking and shut this industry down." President and CEO of the Lacey Oil Corporation, Lacey said he expects to spend more than $1 million in the race to succeed the retiring 11th District Congressman Mike Conaway of Midland. "It's not entirely my own money," he said. Lacey is a fourth-generation oil man whose company was founded by his granddad, James W. Lacey, who got his start in the oil fields of South Texas and Oklahoma. He served 6 years on the Midland City Council from District 4, the western and northwestern sides of town. He has a finance degree from the University of Texas Permian Basin. Asked what the voters are saying, Lacey said that we need a strong fighter in Washington who will stand with President Trump and build a wall at the southern border because we've got crime and drugs flooding into the state of Texas. They want an individual who will be a strong defender of the Second Amendment and have a strong pro-life stance because the right to life is a huge issue at the candidates' forums. We also need to streamline the process for people who want to enter this country legally, because right now the whole process takes 5 to 10 years, while those who enter illegally get free health care and free education on the backs of the American taxpayers. Lacey said marshaling support for the energy business in Washington is important not only to the basin, but also to the nation, because achieving energy independence is integral to national security. We are the fastest growing area in the country, and we need my expertise in labor and transportation issues, he said. I don't know who else will be in the runoff. It might be Pfluger. When we go to the runoff, it will be a completely different campaign at that point. We need a man with actual experience to fight for this industry. Shaking hands and getting in front of people is a good portion of it, too. I am West Texas, and I am the right individual to represent this district in the United States Congress. The other Republican candidates are Wesley Verdell of Brady, Robert Tucker of Comanche, Ned Luscombe of Gardendale, Gene Barber of Colorado City, J.D. Faircloth of Midland, and Casey Gray and Jamie Berryhill, Jr., both of Odessa. Democrat John Mark Hogg and Libertarian Wacy Alpha Cody, both of San Angelo, are unchallenged in the primary. Monday is the final day to register to vote in the March primaries. Here are other important dates for this year's election. February 18th, early voting begins for the Texas primaries and ends 10 days later. For more information about Ector County voting, visit co.ector.tx.us/PAGE/Ector.elections. February 21st, final day to request a ballot to vote by mail in the primaries. February 28th, early voting ends. March 3rd, Election Day.
Legacy Reserves emerges from bankruptcy. Midland's Legacy Reserves emerged from bankruptcy protection last week, 6 months after voluntarily filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. After entering bankruptcy protection in June, the company had to undergo required filings, court hearings, and provisions. Dan Westcott, Legacy's chief executive officer, said in an interview, "The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of Texas confirmed the company's reorganization plan last month. And since then, we've gotten all the documents drafted and approved," Westcott said. Legacy emerges from bankruptcy with significantly reduced debt outstanding, which was achieved by converting debt to equity, he said. Legacy now has $388 million of total debt outstanding, all of which is under a new reserve-based credit facility that has an initial borrowing base of $460 million. The company also has approximately $255 million of new equity capital. We have a new board in place as well, Westcott said. The new board includes Westcott, Gary Gould, former chief operating officer of EQT Corporation, and former senior vice president production and resource development with Continental Resources, Richard Bentz, former chief executive officer and chief operating officer of Resolute Corporation, Robert W. Baker, former executive vice president and general counsel of El Paso Corporation, David Cope, former head of energy private equity of Casse des Dépôts de Placement du Québec, Robert Horn, senior managing director and co-head of GSO's Energy Group, and Kyle Hammond, president and chief operating officer of Legacy. Westcott expressed his gratitude to the former board members, whom he described as incredibly diligent in their service and steadfast in their support. He also thanked the employees for their patience and dedication during the bankruptcy process. Legacy has the same assets and the same employees as it did before filing for bankruptcy protection, he said. And now that it has emerged, the company will continue to drill wells in the Permian Basin and operate those same assets, he said. We're really gaining more freedom with great support from a new set of investors, Westcott said. There wasn't a singular event or episode that pushed Legacy into bankruptcy, he said. We were unable to extend our line of credit, so we are unable to pay our debts, he said. We raised a lot of capital in 2014 when oil was $100 a barrel. Now that the company has significantly reduced debt and a new credit facility, he said, it's an exciting time for Legacy. We are excited about the fresh start for Legacy and our impact on the community. ExxonMobil, A&M offer hazardous liquids training for first responders. With miles of pipelines, underground, and crude oil storage tanks dotting the Permian Basin landscape, knowing how to react in case of disaster is critical for area first responders. That's why ExxonMobil is teaming up with the Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service, TEEX, to provide a hazardous liquids emergency response training course for firefighters. A $200,000 grant from the oil giant funded the development of the course and participation of 100 firefighters at sessions in August and October. A third session is set for January 11th through 12th, and 50 firefighters have already signed up to participate. Nicholas Medina, Public and Government Affairs Manager for ExxonMobil Pipeline, is hoping to see firefighters from West Texas participate in the January session or additional sessions in 2020. Events such as pipeline ruptures or storage tank explosions are rare, but in the event they occur, preparedness is important, he said in a phone interview. The company's support of the course is part of its commitment to the communities where it operates, he said. In addition to the $200,000 grant that funded the development of the program, ExxonMobil will make another $200,000 grant for the program next year. Municipal and volunteer firefighters do an awesome job at what they do. They are well trained for what they do, which is primarily house fires, car fires, rescues like that, said John Berg, director of the Industrial Firefighters Program at TEEX. But training for large plant fires such as Port Neches recently, or tank battery fires or pipeline fires, cost more than their budget allow, he said. The funding from ExxonMobil will allow municipal and volunteer firefighters to receive that training, he said. They pay for everything, hotel rooms, meals, the training, the fuel used in the training, that's very expensive. The foam used in the training, that's very expensive, Berg said in a phone interview. It is a win-win situation, he said. Not only do the communities where companies such as ExxonMobil, Dow, and Leondale Basil have plants, but pipelines and tank batteries have improved protection from better trained firefighters, but those companies have additional support in case of fires or explosions. Those plants typically have brigades trained to combat the fires, he said, but those numbers are limited. That's why it's important to have backup from the municipal and volunteer firefighters. Your adrenaline is pumping, you're fighting fires, you're breathing air, you get worn out. It's important to have people that can rotate in and out, Berg said. The training is done at the 300-acre Brayton Fire Training Field. Berg said when the class arrives for a training session, it's like Disneyland. We have live fires in different scenarios. The fires are bigger than what they've ever seen. He cited the experience of the Hall DeZetta Fire Department in DeZetta, which participated in the first session in August. Fighting tank battery fires was one of the scenarios. 2 days after that session, Fire Chief Memo Gomez said they were called to a tank battery fire and knew how to respond. The training targets volunteer first responders because, as Medina explained, volunteers comprise 85% of the state's fire department. They are our first line of defense, he said. ExxonMobil's emergency response experts work with TEEX to develop the pipeline and tank training curriculum. The training sessions are held at TEEX's Brayton Fire Training Field within the Emergency Preparedness Campus at Bryan College Station, report. Drive to cut emissions will boost carbon capture, use, storage efforts. More than ever, energy companies are working to reduce their carbon dioxide and methane emissions and improve their environmental footprint. It's part of the industry's rising commitment to ESG, environmental, social, and governance, and sustainability policies. We try to do what makes sense, lower our emissions, and be more efficient, said Daryl Ricketson, Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Kinder Morgan CO2 Company. Whether those efforts change the public's mind is a different question, he said. While in Midland last week to address the annual CO2 conference at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center, Ricketson was addressing the first day of the conference, which was designated as a carbon management workshop. He said the company's Tall Cotton Field in Gaines County is the industry's first greenfield residual oil zone project. Tall cotton is a good potential resource that offers good pay, but processing rate and sweep challenges, he said. Optimizing future development of the field will require more data and better understanding of the field and its complex geology. Asked if Kinder Morgan is eyeing other ROZ fields, he said the company needs to study what it has before determining if there are other targets, and the oil price needs to be high enough to fund development. Developing tall cotton and other residual oil zones offers not only significant oil targets, but good potential for carbon capture, use, and storage, Ricketson said. The energy industry's growing commitment to environmental responsibility and sustainability will complement CCUS growth, he said. Technology and the ingenuity of people is needed to crack the code, he said. Kinder Morgan has been active in the CO2 sector for several decades and acquired Shell's CO2 operations in 2000. The same year it took over Devon Energy, the Scurry Area Canyon Reef Operators Committee, SACROC, unit operations in Scurry County, where CO2-based enhanced oil recovery operations had been started by Chevron in 1973. The company is also deploying various CO2 projects in the Yates Field. Ricketson estimates his company's injection of CO2 to enhance oil recovery has prevented 111 billion cubic feet in emissions. The company transports 1.3 billion cubic feet per day of sourced CO2 and recycles 1.8 billion cubic feet of CO2. Through CO2 injections, the company produces 55,000 barrels of oil per day and 121,000 barrels of natural gas liquids per day, and through its pipelines transports 140,000 barrels of oil per day. From 2000 to 2019, the company spent $7.8 billion for the entire CO2 segment, with $1.5 billion of that for sourcing and transporting CO2. Continued development of CO2 supplies is needed to satisfy not only customer demand for existing projects, but future flooding projects, he said. Supplies are available, and Ricketson said while the company's supplies currently come from naturally occurring sources at McElmo Dome, future supplies will come from industrial sources. They'll come from emissions from different industrial plants. They'll capture the emissions and we'll take them away, he said. Challenges include rising costs for well bores, infrastructure needs, and regulations. The regulatory process, Ricketson said, requires significant planning time, with the permitting process taking from 2 to 4 years and involves local, state, and federal agencies. The good news, he told conference attendees, is that concern about the environment will drive more carbon capture projects, which is good for enhanced oil recovery. The pending changes to the 45Q tax statute will help close the gap of economic hurdles, but he said more is needed. What will really help advance carbon capture, use, and storage is developing and attracting those with CO2 EOR expertise, he said. It's a specialized industry that requires great ideas, ingenuity, and strong work ethic. Complex problem solving and diverse disciplines are needed in this business, he said.
Thank you for listening to this week's Business and Oil articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.